Thanks, Colin, and it's lovely to be back again this morning with you. And I'll not be able to stay for the table. Colin knows that, as I have Ballymacashan this afternoon. So it's a busy enough day. So it's lovely to be here, and let's turn again to the book of Ezekiel, to chapter 19. Chapter 19 of the book of Ezekiel. We'll just read the whole chapter. It's one of the shorter ones, only 14 verses. It gives us a feeling for the chapter, and then we'll comment on it after that. Ezekiel 19, verse 1. Moreover, take thou up a lamentation for the princes of Israel, and say, what is thy mother? A lioness. She lay down among lions, she nourished her whelps among young lions. And she brought up one of her whelps, it became a young lion, and it learned to catch the prey, it devoured men. The nations also heard of him, he was taken in their pit, and they brought him with chains into the land of Egypt. Now when she saw that she had waited, and her hope was lost, then she took another of her whelps and made him a young lion. And he went up and down among the lions. He became a young lion and learned to catch the prey and devoured men. And he knew their desolate palaces, and he laid waste their cities, and the land was desolate, and the fullness thereof by the noise of his roaring. Then the nations set against him on every side from the provinces and spread their net over him, and he was taken in their pit. And they put him in ward in chains and brought him to the king of Babylon. They brought him into holes that his voice should no more be heard upon the mountains of Israel. Their mother is like a vine in thy blood, planted by the waters. She was fruitful and full of branches by reason of many waters. And she had strong rods for the scepters of them that bear rule, and her stature was exalted among the thick branches, and she appeared in her height with the multitude of her branches. But she was plucked up in fury. She was cast down to the ground, and the east wind had dried up her fruit. Her strong rods were broken and withered. The fire consumed them. And now she is planted in the wilderness, in a dry and thirsty ground. And fire has gone out of her rod of her branches, which hath devoured her fruit, so that she hath no strong rod to be a scepter to rule. This is a lamentation, and shall be for a lamentation. The title of this chapter would be Ezekiel's Funeral Dirge. It's a lament. And you can see the book ends of the chapter, verse 1. Moreover, take thou up a lamentation for the princes of Israel. And at the end of verse 14, this is a lamentation and shall be for a lamentation. It's a lament for the last days of the kings of Judah. Well, these chapters are a bit like Pilgrim's Progress, that we seek to put an identification onto the figures here. We have all been to funerals. I have to conduct a funeral tomorrow morning in Ballymena. And we've all been to funerals. We've been to funerals of those who were clearly unsaved. And that is not an easy time, the way the Christian thinks. We've been to the funerals of those who are saved and you could stay all day and hear God's word and sing the praises of God, knowing that that deceased person is with Christ, which is far better. But this is not a happy funeral. And Israel is pictured as a mother in two pictures. In verses 1 to 9 and in verses 10 to 14. Verse 2 says, "What is your mother, a lioness?" And then verse 10, "Your mother was like a vine in your bloodline." Because it was the nation who gave birth to kings and rulers. The birth of Christ is pictured like that in that great chapter in Revelation chapter 12, which is to me what was going on behind the scenes, what the devil was doing when Jesus was born. In Revelation 12 and 1 and 2, we read, "Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then, being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth." Who was this child and what would this child do? In verse 5, "She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron." This child was clearly Christ. The woman who gave birth here in Revelation 12 is not Mary, but it's the nation. It's the church. The Reformation Study Bible says, edited by Joel Beakey, "The woman is the church, encompassing God's people both under the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. Her labor pains represent her sorrows as she waits for the Christ to come and reign." So this chapter divides itself nicely into three parts. We see the family of this mother, and we see the fruitfulness of this mother, and we see the fall of this mother. In verses 1 to 9, there are two kings here in view. One in verses 2 to 4, and the other one in verses 5 to 9. In verses 2 to 4, the king that's in view is clearly Jehoahaz. He was the 17th king of Judah's 20. He only reigned 3 months. He was only 23 years of age in 2 Kings chapter 23, verses 31 to 34. We have his short biography. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna, not the Jeremiah of the prophet Jeremiah. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. Now Pharaoh Necho put him in prison at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem. And he imposed on the land a tribute of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. Then Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in place of his father Josiah, and changed his name to Jehoiakim. And Pharaoh took Jehoahaz and went to Egypt, and he died there. So this short life, this life of which we don't know much about, Jehoahaz, how sad it is that it's summed up in the words of verse 32, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. And that seems to be the summary of his life. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. What an obituary. Oh, what a summary of somebody's life that can be written above many a life. Not just someone as young as this, but a lot older. His life can, or her life can just be summed up. He did evil. She did evil in the sight of the Lord. Tragic. And word says here, and Pharaoh took Jehoahaz and went to Egypt, and he died there. That is fulfilled in Ezekiel 19 and verse 4 that we read. The nations also heard of him. He was trapped in their pit, and they brought him with chains to the land of Egypt. But it seems that that short reign was a ruthless reign. Verse 3 says, she brought up one of her cubs and he became a young lion. He learned to catch prey and he devoured men. He was a ruthless king. His life, as it says in Herbert Lockyer's book, All the Men of the Bible, his life, although brief, it was bad. And its end bitter. Although brief, it was bad, and its end bitter. And he would have died young. He was only 23 years. He reigned 3 months. He was certainly in his 20s, we assume, when he died. Then in verses 5 to 9, this king is Jehoiakim. As Jehoahaz was the 17th king of Judah's 20, he was the 19th king. He was the penultimate king of Judah. And again, he only reigned 3 months. And he was only 18 years of age when he came to the throne. 2 Kings 24 and verse 8 says of him, Jehoiakim was 18 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. His mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. And again, his life is summed up in exactly the same words as Jehoahaz. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father had done. What a terrible example, what a terrible influence is that. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city as his servants were besieging it. Then Jehoiakim, king of Judah, his mother, his servants, his princes, and his officers went out to the king of Babylon, and the king of Babylon, in the 8th year of his reign, took him prisoner. And all of them were carried off captive to Babylon. Verse 14. Also he carried into captivity all Jerusalem, all the captains, and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land. And he carried Jehoiakim captive to Babylon. The king's mother, the king's wives, his officers, and the mighty of the land he carried into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. And again, Ezekiel says of him in verse 9, they put him in a cage with chains and brought him to the king of Babylon. They brought him in nets that his voice should no longer be heard on the mountains of Israel. But that's not the end of him. When you read 2 Kings chapter, the end of 2 Kings chapter 25, these are the last verses. And you'll read them again almost verbatim at the end of Jeremiah chapter 52, verses 31 to 34. This young man who was 18, he was only a teenager. We meet him again when he's 55 years of age. He's been in Babylon all that time. 2 Kings 25 and verse 27. Now it came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, in the 12th month, on the 27th day of the month, that evil Merodach, king of Babylon, in the year that he began to reign, released Jehoiakim, king of Judah, from prison. He spoke kindly to him and gave him a more prominent seat than those of the kings who were with him in Babylon. So Jehoiakim changed from his prison garments, and he ate bread regularly before the king all the days of his life. And as for his provisions, there was a regular ration given him by the king, a portion for each day, all the days of his life. What an end to this man's life. 37 years in a Babylonian prison. And I'm sure that that wasn't all that comfortable. I'm sure it was hard. But look at the mercy of this king of Babylon, evil Merodach, his name is. Not a very attractive name. But look at the goodness and the kindness he shows to Jehoiakim. He didn't have to extend to him kindness and mercy. He was in the 37th year of his captivity. Well, he's well used to it now. Just leave him there. But no, this man changed his life. This man changed his surroundings. This man changed his outlook. This man changed his very clothes. This man changed his diet. This man changed his company. This king could have chosen anybody to give this treatment to. But he chose Jehoiakim. He gave him a more prominent seat than those of the kings who were with him in Babylon. There were other kings. I don't know, and we don't know how much longer Jehoiakim lived after this. But surely you can imagine the thanks he would have given to evil Merodach for changing his life. What a beautiful picture of what God has done for us. This is a sinful earthly king, and yet look at the kindness he shows to another individual. Jehoiakim experienced liberation. He released Jehoiakim, king of Judah, from prison. Well, sure, we have been released. We have experienced redemption. That's what redemption means. We have been set free. And I like this. Not only did he experience liberation, he experienced consolation. He spoke kindly to him. I wonder what he said. What nice things did evil Merodach say to Jehoiakim? No doubt they were comforting words. No doubt they were words of reassurance, words of hope. Doesn't God speak kindly to us through his word? Aren't there kind things that he says to believers? Words of hope, words of reassurance, words of peace. He experienced liberation. He experienced consolation. He experienced exaltation. He gave him a more prominent seat than those of the kings who were with him in Babylon. He had been raised up. Just the way Joseph was raised up out of the prison to be next to Pharaoh, to be the prime minister of Egypt, more or less. Ephesians tells us that we have been lifted up into the heavenlies, exalted. He experienced liberation and consolation. He experienced exaltation. He experienced provision of both dress and diet. So Jehoiakim changed from his prison garments, maybe garments he had worn for years, maybe they were worn, they were dirty. But he changed from his prison garments. He was given new garments. The filthy rags of our own righteousness has been removed from us. We have been clothed with the garments of salvation and the robe of righteousness, Isaiah tells us. And his diet changed. He ate bread regularly before the king all the days of his life. And as for his provisions, there was a regular ration given him by the king, a portion for each day, all the days of his life. Prison food wouldn't have been all that attractive and desirable. He was given new food. And Jeremiah adds this. It's exactly, almost the same verses. All the days of his life. But Isaiah adds this, or sorry, Jeremiah adds this in 52 verse 34, until the day of his death. So Jehoiakim wasn't getting up each morning and saying to himself, is this too good to be true? Maybe I'll be thrown back into prison again. And maybe this man's mind will change towards me. No, until the day of his death. It was for the rest of his life. He wasn't going back to the Babylonian prison. His life was changed. And that's what the Lord has done for us. So the family of this mother, two kings in mind. The mother being Israel, being the nation. Jehoahaz, the 17th king. Jehoiakim, the 19th king. We see the fruitfulness of this mother in verses 10 and 11. Your mother was like a vine in your bloodline, planted by the waters, fruitful and full of branches. Because of many waters, she had strong branches for scepters of rulers. She towered in stature above the thick branches and was seen in her height amid the dense foliage. And this is one time in the past. This would have been a familiar picture to Ezekiel's hearers, this vine. In Genesis 49, when Jacob gathered all the sons around his dying bed and he addressed each one of them before he died, He said this in verse 9, Judah is a lion's whelp. So there's the picture of the lion. Again, from the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his knees, until Shiloh comes. And to him shall be the obedience of the people, binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk. So in Ezekiel chapter 19, you've these two pictures together, the lion and the vine, and here Jacob has them. Maybe that's where Ezekiel got it from. We sang Psalm 80 there, and that's another picture that's given for us in Psalm 80, verses 8 to 16. You have brought a vine out of Egypt. You have cast out the nations. Remember, the Lord removed the Canaanites and the Hittites and so on. You have cast out the nations and planted it. You prepared room for it and caused it to take deep root, and it filled the land. The hills were covered with its shadow, and the mighty cedars with its boughs. She sent out her boughs to the sea and her branches to the river, the Mediterranean, the Nile. Why have you broken down her hedges, so that all who pass by the way pluck her fruit? The boar out of the woods uproots it, and the wild beast of the field devours it. Return, we beseech you, O God of hosts. Look down from heaven and see, and visit this vine. Make it fruitful again. And surely that's a cry from our hearts when we look at the state of the church today. Return, we beseech you, O God of hosts. Look down from heaven and see, and visit this vine, and the vineyard which your right hand has planted, and the branch that you made strong for yourself. It is burned with fire, it is cut down. They perish at the rebuke of your countenance. And Isaiah chapter 5, another picture again. Now let me sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved regarding his vineyard. My well-beloved has a vineyard on a very fruitful hill. He dug it up and cleared out its stones and planted it with the choicest vine. He built a tower in its midst and also made a wine press in it. So he expected it to bring forth good grapes, but it brought forth wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, please, between me and my vineyard. What more could have been done to my vineyard that I have not done a minute? Why then, when I expected it to bring forth good grapes, did it bring forth wild grapes? And who are we talking about here? Verse 7, for the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are his pleasant plant. So you can see how the Old Testament prophets took these pictures and used them. They were to learn from the past. The family of this a mother, the fruitfulness of this mother. Oh, when Israel was in a right relationship with God, what blessings were poured out upon them. What influence they were to other nations. But when they weren't in good shape, then it just all fell apart. The family of this mother, the fruitfulness of this mother, the fall of this mother, verses 12 to 14. But she was plucked up in fury. She was cast down to the ground, and the east wind dried her fruit. Her strong branches were broken and withered. The fire consumed them. And now she is planted in the wilderness, in a dry and thirsty land. And chapter 20 picks that up again, when again Ezekiel is looking back over the history of Israel from when they were in Egypt. But we'll come to that chapter. And now she is planted in the wilderness in a dry and thirsty land. Fire has come out from a rod of her branches and devoured her fruit, so that she has no strong branch, a scepter for ruling. And you'd think that all was lost. And one has said that the picture is not difficult to decode. The vine is Judah, planted by the Lord in perfect conditions. As a result, she produces many ones capable of ruling, but pride is her downfall. In wrath, the Lord uproots her, replanting her outside the promised land, back in the desert of exile. The fire which started in one of the branches, and that was maybe the last king of Judah, being Zedekiah, results not simply in the loss of the fruit, the destruction of the land and the people, but also in the annihilation of all the other strong branches which would have been potential rulers. In Zedekiah, the Davidic dynasty will come to a sudden end, at least for the present. So the last king of Judah was Zedekiah, who reigned 11 years, from 597 to 586 BC. He wouldn't listen to Jeremiah. Jeremiah and him would have had one-to-one conversations. He turned a deaf ear to the ministry of Jeremiah. Zedekiah was cruelly blinded by Nebuchadnezzar before being taken to Babylon, and the last thing that he saw with his sight was his sons being put to death. He died in prison in Babylon. But all is not lost. Verse 14, so that she has no strong branch, a scepter for ruling. But we read in Genesis chapter 49 and verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. Who's this scepter? Who's this Shiloh but the Savior? This is Jacob's prophecy of the coming of Jesus Christ into the world. And in Numbers chapter 24, verse 17, we have this prophecy from Balaam of all people. And he's another interesting study, another interesting Old Testament character. Numbers 24, verse 17. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob. A scepter shall rise out of Israel and batter the brow of Moab and destroy all the sons of tumult. This star, this scepter. These are clearly prophecies of the Lord Jesus Christ. Christ was yet to come. The scepter would one day be born. This is a funeral dirge. a chapter suitable for a funeral. And yet when you come to chapter 37, which D.V. will come to, where's Ezekiel in a vision but in a valley of dry bones? God says to him, shall these bones live? Humanly speaking, that is just not going to happen. But God breathed upon these bones. The bones reconnected. Flesh came upon these bones, organs. They stood up a mighty great army. It's only the Lord that can do that. That can revive like that. This nation would rise from the dead and be a mighty influence in the world once again. Christ was yet to come. There is hope. Even though all appears hopeless, it's not. Christ will reign where'er the sun. He is the scepter. So may the Lord bless this chapter to your hearts and our lives. And these chapters are, they may be old, but their message is ever new. And we're going to sing Psalm 80 about the vine, verses 14 to 19, to the tune St. Cyril, number 97. Psalm 80, verse 14. O God of hosts, we thee beseech, return now unto thine. Look down from heaven and love, behold, and visit this thy vine. Psalm 80, 14 to 19, to the tune St. Cyril.